reason, I'm the reason everybody fired up this evening. I'm exhausted, barely breathing, holding on to what I believe. And no matter what, you'll never take that from me.
I'm helping you.
Helping?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 25 of Breaking In. I'm Manny.
Cheryl.
And we have a very special guest today. Yay. That we've been trying to get on the show for... months. Since we started the show. This is before the show.
Eons. Okay, months.
Jennifer Fontaine.
Yay! Woo!
Welcome to the couch.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You've been consistently making up excuses like going to Turkey for 2 months. to not be on the show.
And we've never verified that, by the way.
You know,
that's right.
We're assuming she went.
I told you we could have done this while I was lounging on the Mediterranean Sea, but you didn't have the capability to accommodate that. So.
We could have Skyped.
But then you miss brunch.
Yeah, that's right.
Brunch is
that's
all true. Important for this. Very you true. Have to do brunch.
I agree.
Cheryl missed brunch this morning. Do you want to tell the listeners why?
I cracked some ribs last night because Manny and I decided to dance.
On the table.
Okay, I don't know how the table came into it, but apparently the table came in at some point. And that's when Cheryl fell on her ribs, so I'm much better now after 4 mimosas.
Yes.
I can do this. This morning, not so much.
Jennifer, actor, producer... Director? Have you directed before?
No.
Okay.
Want to?
Do you want to direct?
I'm pretty sure that somewhere down the line I will direct something.
Blogger. Newfound blogger extraordinaire.
Yes. Mommy blogger.
Which we will get into because that is writing as well.
Yes.
But I obviously want to start with talking about acting.
Sure.
You are the first actress we've had. On the show, we have agents, managers, stand-up comics, writers, producers, no actors.
Nope.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm honored.
So you're the first. And the first guest of 2013.
What?
So I know we were kind of talking about acting a little bit, and I stopped you because I didn't want to get too far into it.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were talking about is, and kind of where I want to, I'm sorry. Before we get into acting, let's start back to... your mom's job, moving, you're from New Orleans, mm-hmm. You moved to Orlando.
Yeah.
You told me kind of a short story that I thought was really interesting at the perfect time of your childhood. So retell that story.
Okay, yeah, sure. So I was pretty lucky to grow up. My mom and I moved to Orlando, Florida when Orlando wasn't even part of the film market. My mom got a job in the marketing department of Orlando Universal before they even broke ground on the property. So we, you know, packed up everything and we moved to Orlando, Florida. And when they opened the property, I basically had free reign of the back lots and all of the sound stages and everything.
Amazing.
I had already sort of dabbled in, you know, I did my first play when I was in fifth grade, but I didn't really have a full understanding of, you know, my passion for acting and for, you know, storytelling and all that stuff. But when I, you know, was given that opportunity to sort of like peek into the world of film
and no pressure, just go play with that.
Exactly. Exactly. I just fully discovered my interest and intrigue for it.
Well, that sounds like a fun way to...
Yeah, and I think...
That's way fun to get into it that way.
What I was telling Manny was that the great thing about that, it wasn't just like, I want to act. I want to tell stories. That was the difference. So that I was able to see all of the people that it took to create this thing. It's not just a single person in front of a camera. It's the, you know, the grip, it's the gaffer, it's the director, it's the DP, it's the writer, it's the all of these different people.
Right.
And you can be a part of the process in so many different ways. And it's fulfilling in every different way. And I think, like, that gave me a different perspective when I came out here.
And how old were you? Roughish?
I was 14, 15, yeah. 13, 14.
And that's kind of a motif that constantly comes up on the show, where when you're at a young age, you don't really know what it takes to make a movie. You just know there's actors and directors. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that don't there's a lot of people that don't even understand that there's somebody writes that.
Mm-hmm.
But you being 14 and seeing that not only is there someone in front of the camera and someone directly behind it, but there's hundreds of people around them.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine that what you're saying, that opportunity of having that world opened your eyes to so much.
Yeah. And then once getting in front of the camera, I think you have such a greater empathy and understanding of what it is that's going on around you, so that you're okay with waiting, or you're okay with going back to your trailer, or just sitting there patiently, because you understand what is going on around you.
They have to do the lighting.
Yeah,
they have
there's
to get
so much.
Everything all perfect before you even start.
That's why you're not a star, because you're not self-centered.
Yes, diva. You need to bring out your inner diva, and then you can be a star.
I went at it all backwards.
Do you mean I have to wait?
It's no longer your husband's fault. You did that. So we were also talking at brunch about kind of the, you know, I got on my soapbox about self-appointed gurus in the writing world, but you were ready to unleash.
No, I don't know how much I'm going to unleash, but go ahead. We'll see.
But the amount of bottom feeders that have to be in the acting world,
mm-hmm.
you know, I guess what we were discussing was, like, in the writing world, there is, anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Acting, there's a certain niche, and it, of course, this is just my perspective,
mm-hmm.
But you have to have looks, you have to have talent, you have to have persona,
uh-huh.
where you don't necessarily have to have that as a writer. So the gurus that are focusing on that group of individual, it's a very different mindset.
Yeah.
So just talking about kind of like, give us a little insight into the starting out in the acting
okay,
world.
So have you ever gone for an audition mm-hmm. in a Walmart dress?
In a Walmart dress?
Yeah, we get writers that don't know how to dress.
That literally, like, Daisy May dresses, like, paisley blue.
I don't know.
Pink ribbon.
Well, which would be fine if you were auditioning for that part.
Yeah, Oklahoma.
Exactly.
No, I don't know.
But that's important. How everybody sees you when you walk in.
And I mean, you being an actor, that is, I mean, the first thing. Before you even open your mouth, you're being judged when you walk into
a room. It's the epitome of judging a book by its cover.
Literally,
actors are...
It really is. But I think, and I, having been in this industry for such a long time, and being, you know, having walked into that room with the writer and the director and the casting director and all sitting there, you know, across the table from you, I've been across that table as well as the producer and the writer. And I can tell you that maybe this is my, like, you know, oh gosh, gee golly kind of attitude towards life, but I...
That was such a piss poor. That was a terrible... God, what were you doing there? I don't even know what you were doing.
I think, and I know from the people that I know in the industry, is that most of the time when you walk into that room, they are rooting for you to be that person that they want to hire.
They're hoping
because that's their job, is to find the best person for that role. Unless, of course, I mean, there's all different kinds of factors, you know, like, you know, offers out and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when they're just casting, you know, a supporting role or whatever, they really want you to be the person, like, because then their job is over. You know,
right. We don't have to see anybody else.
Yeah, just walk into the room and, like, be the person that we're looking for. So I think every time you walk into that room, you have that opportunity to be that person.
That's a good attitude.
If you're not, then you're not, as long as you do the work and you are professional about it. You can't have every role in the world. It's not written for you.
Right.
So I think that as long as you are professional and you do your job and you're you know.
And you just try to be that. You just come into the room and try to be the character you think it's supposed to be.
Yeah, you just do your job and you listen. That's it. That's what it's all about.
I would, I swear to God, I would probably throw up. I would be Stan. Stan from, I would just be like,
South Park.
Yes, I can't, yeah.
I was there. Took me a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, I would, I would
freeze. Which is funny, because I think the very first, so let's go back to us meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So you came in for an internship at Copelson.
Yep.
And you were.
Me and my pregnant self.
Yes, you were. how far along were you?
I think I was like five months.
And in the interview, you were like, yeah, just so you know, in about 4 weeks, I'm going to be on bed rest for about 2 months. Which was like, made no sense of like, why are you trying to find an internship?
Yeah. Because I was on bed rest. I was going to be on bed rest. And I was like,
give me
reading
something
scripts
to do.
Would be
yeah.
great.
And also, I think the same week that we met, you had also landed a very brief 3-episode arc.
Days of Our Lives. Yeah, it was like, where you had it was around like in that same month that it happened.
Where you had to play an escaped convict.
Yes.
And I remember.
Pregnant?
Yes.
Well, they had to hide the fact that
they
I was pregnant.
Put her in. Because I watched.
Jumpsuit.
I watched. I watched the 3 episodes you were on.
Yes, you did.
And I fast forwarded through all the other bullshit.
Yeah.
But.
Was it? It was good.
But they shot you from the waist up a lot, from the chest up a lot, and then in your long shots, there was either someone in front of you, or they put you in a giant
orange jumpsuit.
Moo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of, basically.
It was pretty funny.
It was awesome.
But you knew the cast, but I remember you telling me the story of how you got that. You knew the casting director, and going back to your professionalism, and if you do the work, people you'll get a good reputation, and that casting director knew you and called you out of the blue, right?
Well, no, actually, it wasn't. That's not the story.
Manny.
Sorry.
So it was 2.5 years ago. I don't remember every single detail.
But it was the fact that, you know, long story short, my manager at the time did not notify casting that I was pregnant when I got the call.
Ooh.
So I walked in, and I was obviously pregnant. I was I was like 5.5 months.
I get
at
why
that
he
time.
Did that, though.
And so I walked into the room, and the casting director I had never met her before, actually. The casting director looked at me, and she was like, "Oh, you're pregnant."
No.
And I was like, "Yes, I am. How exciting!" I was so excited, you know. And she was like,
that's a problem.
That's not going to work for this. And so then we just started shooting the shit about, like, pregnancy and, like, getting, because we had gone through all this fertility stuff. I mean, like, we just went off on this tangent, like, just two women sitting in a room. And then, you know, at the end, she was like, "Okay, well, you're already here. I'm going to put you on tape. You know, I don't want you to have wasted this whole time to come down here when you're pregnant and all this stuff." So, you know,
you found a woman with a heart.
I turned.
Holy shit!
There is a lot
in Hollywood.
There are a lot of them. Luckily,
I'm
I found them. I've been lucky in my career to have found them.
The nice people.
Nice people.
The three nice people.
You have
people
to
in
look
Hollywood.
Hard for them.
Yes, you do. I imagine.
But they are there. They're there. Anyway, so long story short, I did the audition, and she looked at me, and she was like, "Great, thanks. Perfect. You did it, and now I've been trying to cast this role for 3 days, and now I want to hire you." And, like, there's 5 other people sitting out in the waiting room to read for this role, and so she's like, "Sit down on my couch." She called up the wardrobe person on the show and was like, "I need to know what wardrobe you're going to put this character in, because I have this woman, and she's pregnant, and I'm going to hire her for this role, and I need to make sure you're going to put her in."
Let's make this happen, people.
Yeah, and no one else needs to know.
She's just a fat woman. Let's go with fat woman.
Well, and you know, so it's Days of Your Lives. I'm sure they could have just written in the fact that you were pregnant.
I'm
with
sure they
could.
A prison escapee pregnant?
I'm sure they could.
Come on.
Yeah, come on.
That works. I see that.
Yeah.
Twin sisters and
I'm
brain...
Sure.
you know, sure. transfers. Come on. It's a soap opera, people.
Oh, I was asleep the whole time.
It was a dream.
It was all a dream.
Exactly.
She wasn't really pregnant. It was a dream.
Tangent. Because for listeners of the show, you know that Cheryl's biggest pet peeve is aliens in the third act. Yours is actually, it was all a dream.
Yes.
I concur with that completely.
I remember watching, what was the Rebecca Romijn Samus film? The one where she was like the thief.
He's really good at this.
The
thief.
I
know, but it was like one of the big art house directors. Look it up. Oh god, it's gonna drive me crazy.
Femme Fatale?
Yeah.
No. That was a Brian De Palma.
Yeah, De Palma, exactly. That film.
That's it.
I've never seen that. It was all a dream.
It was all a dream.
Damn it.
Go fuck yourself.
It was all a dream.
She
about
wakes
aliens.
Up in the bathtub.
About aliens.
She wakes up in the bathtub.
That's why you quoted that, see.
I was so pissed.
Her.
My husband and I looked at each other and we're like, you have to be fucking kidding me. I was so pissed.
I knew about that movie is that they showed the entire movie in the trailer.
Oh, yeah. And
it's fast forward. It's like legendary for he showed the whole movie in 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
I don't remember that, but I remember
being pissed
off.
Yeah, I got a problem with that, people.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, don't need to watch that movie.
Yeah.
Don't. I did watch it.
So we actually skipped over, you were talking about, like, you know, the bottom feeders.
Yes, the bottom feeders, that's what I wanted to
go back
to.
So, because this, you know, I was like, where's my soapbox?
Wait, let me get one.
I'm not going to actually go too much on a tangent, but because I want to preface it by saying that when I came out here, you know, in 1996, fell prey to that, you know, all of it. Like most most people
give
do.
Me the, give me
yeah,
the
what did you fall prey to?
Piece of shit story, like,
no,
I'm gonna
no,
go
no,
find
I mean,
Sky and punch him in the head.
Well, it was more of like, back then, when I came out here, the casting director workshops were mm-hmm. like the big deal, and that's how you were able to meet casting director. I mean, it just kind of blossomed into this whole industry, which it is like the raging industry now. And, but it was sort of new back then. And, you know, so you would go meet these casting directors and they would basically, you know, give you these sides and you would perform in front of them. And then,
okay, give me, set me up. You coming into a like skanky office?
Yes,
you coming into
yes,
a house?
A skanky
what?
Office.
A skanky office.
Skanky
All
office
right.
space in All the right. middle of Hollywood that smells like urine or,
okay.
you know, whatever.
All right. Thank you.
or North Hollywood, or, you know, I mean, there's
right.
a plethora of them
yeah.
Back in the day. And you would pay your $30 or $25, depending on if you bought the bulk package or not. And you would basically, you know, pay to play. You would pay them for an opportunity to audition for them.
Which is
in
still,
the hopes
right.
that they would hire you down the line.
Yeah, sounds...
Now, my preface was that the fact that I did this, and that's how I actually got my Taft-Hartley.
Really?
So, I'm not going to bash it by saying, like, it can't work for some people, because it worked for me. Like, I, on my, like, fifth casting director workshop, I got a call to audition for a Mattel commercial. I was non-union. This
from
was
hit,
like
from
in 97 from a
call.
Casting director workshop.
Okay.
And I got the call back and then I booked the job and I got my Taft-Hartley into the union because of that. But at the same time, the problem is that these people are going in, you know, they're sending the assistant of the assistant from the office, the person that has no ability to hire anyone. To
no
even bring anyone
right.
into
right.
the office for an audition, you know, and these people are paying their rent off of the backs of these actors. That's
right.
the problem.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of the same thing with Pitch Fest for writers,
yeah.
where it's the same
okay.
thing.
Okay, but
and,
still.
And for the record, much like as much as Cheryl and I bash Pitch Fest, we do know people that have been successful and right. have gotten their start for PitchFest. Doesn't happen for everybody, yeah. but and PitchFest, as we were talking about at brunch, are still technically pay to play because mm-hmm. you got to pay to get into the event.
Yeah.
Okay, but still, your worst story of one of those five going in for casting.
Mm-hmm. Or just auditioning guys. In mm-hmm. general.
Mm-hmm. Auditioning, I'm sure. It's, what's your worst story? Like, well, you're like, I mean, oh my God, I can't believe it. I fell for that. Or
the one that I remember is this one particular casting director where I went to his workshop a couple of times, about three times, I think. And then I saw him like just randomly out in the city, and he was like, oh, hey, Jen, I'm going to see you at my next workshop. It's going to be this Sunday, whatever. Like, he says, I hope to see you there. And I'm like, you know my work.
Right. Why would you go work. Again?
Why would I pay you another $30, another $25, $30 to go to your workshop again? It's not like it's a class. It's not like you're teaching me anything. Right. There's no instruction. I mean, at this point, it was different because now there are actually guidelines. The state, stepped in and said, this is illegal. What you're doing is illegal. You have to at least set like a class. Curriculum.
I was going to say, so literally you were just coming in, doing a scene or something like that, and they were going, thank you, $30 you mm-hmm. paid.
Audition. You're auditioning for them. You're paying to audition for them.
But they're actually even working for a movie. They're not.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that I think that's the one that stuck with me the most was because he was a fan of my work. Like, he had told me, before. He brought me in, actually, for a Spielberg film that he was casting before. So I knew that he
kind of did something.
Liked my work. So then why would I then, again, pay for your workshop?
Like, did you check his credentials? Like, later? Oh, yeah. Later on? Did yeah, you yeah, yeah. later? What did you say? Did he really do casting for
big movies? No, he did.
Movies?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a research girl. Like, I wouldn't go in to just see,
which
like,
which is a little bit harder back then, too. Because it's not like IMDb was around or.
Right.
IMDb, it just kind of. Yeah, I mean, it really hadn't. Yeah, IMDb was not around back then.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of information mm-hmm. you can get at your fingertips now compared to back then.
Oh, yeah.
People still don't research.
To find out if somebody's stupid. Yeah.
I'm a big researcher.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But back then, it's like, yeah, it was pretty hard, especially being new,
Yeah, I can't imagine. So you didn't get naked and get on anybody's couch. So is that what you're saying?
No.
All right. Find another actress, Manny.
She's on our couch.
Not that I haven't been propositioned to do so.
Oh, okay. See, that's what I was looking for.
But I.
This will get you into the movie mm-hmm. if you sleep with me.
No, actually, no. I've never come across that.
Really?
Never come across that. Nope. I have been, we were talking about this earlier, actually.
Well, everybody in Hollywood's a pervert in some sort of way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you either deal with that or you don't.
Yeah.
I mean.
You have to.
Which, for me, I find the fact that the Hollywood in general is like the last bastion of you can say whatever the fuck you want to say and not worry about getting sued for being inappropriate.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. There is no sexual harassment on Hollywood
I'm
set.
I'm set.
Ever.
Seriously.
Oh, my
God.
Can you
imagine? It's nothing but a bunch of construction workers.
Who are in charge.
Yeah.
And, of everything. And I mean, it's we were, again, going back to the whole job thing. I mean, you don't have to be a writer. The gaffers and the lighting team mm-hmm. are just a bunch of construction guys. Mm-hmm. The guys who build the sets are literally guys who know how to build wood, use wood to build things. I mean, they're just guys.
I imagine they're the least of your... They don't bother you.
But what I'm saying is that
it's the high. That's what I'm saying.
It's
the people
shop.
In charge,
and if you've
are
ever,
actually the head construction workers.
And if you work, and if
baby,
and if you've ever worked in a shop or know anyone who's worked in a shop, I mean, that's just you just got to roll with it.
Yeah.
You can't be offended by mm-hmm. dick jokes and whatever
no,
else.
Hollywood has their own set of laws, mm-hmm. so it's not.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've actually, being a woman in this industry is, you know.
Well, I mean, it's just like even, and again, with the misogyny, I mean, just watching shows like Entourage or stuff, you know, Ari's character, that is, agents talk like that. They yell at you. They scream. They say inappropriate things.
Any other job, you say, you can't say that to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, producers. I have tons of stories of inappropriateness. There's actually, it's Hollywood legend, but there's a very famous producer who's been a producer for decades, literally has a pubic hair collection, and will, and,
what?
And yes, you've never heard this story?
No.
That's disgusting.
I've
heard it from several different people, so I know for sure, like, they all say the same thing, so it's either, it's urban legend that has become law, or it's just, but knowing the person... Because I do know somebody who knows him. I know it's true. But it goes back, like Marilyn Monroe. I mean, it was legendary that actresses who came to his house, he would ask them for a clipping. And they're literally in a Ziploc baggies labeled with the actress. And I'm talking
DNA
about
DNA of every
Lana Turner, Marilyn Monroe, Elizabeth Taylor. I mean,
what?
Fucking names. And there's a pair of writers that told this story the first time I heard it. And they're like, yeah. He's like, oh, you want to see the pubic hair collection? And literally has his butler bring the box. And the butler brings
the
fucking
box. It's like the
weed box
of
samples.
Oh, my God.
And it opens
exactly.
It. And he's like, and he makes the joke that because at a certain... you know, they're dated, so at a certain year cutoff,
mm-hmm.
there's no more famous collections of pubic hair. And he's like, that's because they all shave nowadays.
Oh my God.
And it's like, okay, so you're a pair of newbie writers who are going to this guy's house for a meeting, and he's made some of the most amazing films of all time.
Yeah, and you're getting shown pubic hair.
Yeah, what are you going to do? You're like, really, dude? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
That is so normal.
You just laugh, you know, like,
and
oh,
you, but, everybody but, collects pubic hair.
And yeah. and that's one of those there's a reason why the term Hollywood story exists,
mm-hmm.
because it's shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I if that ever happened to me, that'd be fucking hysterical, and you'd be damn straight to be on the show the next week, being like, you're never gonna believe what happened to me
mm-hmm.
this week. I got shown a collection of pubic hair.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the greatest thing I ever heard.
I know.
Let me show you that.
I now know what Marilyn Monroe smelled like.
Let me show you my ass hair. That's from the men.
But yeah, I mean, it's either, what are you going to do? Are you going to get freaked out by that shit, or are you going to roll with it? And I mean, it's even more...
it's literally the only industry... that people are allowed to act like they act,
mm-hmm.
and nobody sues them,
mm-hmm.
nobody... It's insane to me.
I can't remember the last sexual harassment claim that's come out of Hollywood. I don't remember any. Well, I mean, you can argue, like, Bob Barker and the Price is
Right
Girls
right.
happened
yes.
a couple of times,
yeah.
but David Letterman, I think, had one... But,
well, it wasn't like sexual harassment though, was it? It was just that he was like having an affair with his
yeah,
assistant.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Stephanie. I was like, I'm a huge Letterman fan. So.
She's an idiot.
That's like one of my goals in life.
To bang David Letterman?
Have an affair with
he's
David
like
Letterman?
He's like 80. No.
Yeah,
to
and his wife
show.
Is about your age.
Wow,
to be on
good
the show.
For him to be on the show, of course. Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Better hurry up. It's getting old.
I know.
I want to be minus Kimmel. Kimmel or Conan.
I love both of them, but
yeah.
Dave is Dave. Dave is Dave. I'm sorry.
These are.
No one does what Dave does.
Right.
No one.
Right.
He's
Johnny
our
Carson.
Johnny Carson.
He's
now, for our generation, he's our Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
If you gotta get on there and
Dave, what I love about Dave is that he doesn't pander. No. Like yeah. Leno or all right. those guys. He's his, like licking. He's licking your apps. Basically,
his
like Dave that. Does not do that.
His yeah. Paris Hilton interview is agenda, famous.
You know, like that's what I love about him. He's not like he. Just
right.
John
he has
Stewart.
That, he has like that
John
attitude.
Stewart. Same
yes.
way. You like
yes.
John Stewart.
Ah, he's my boy.
I would do him. I would totally do him.
Totally. Oh, because he's smart.
He is so smart.
Super smart.
So smart. Yeah. So quick.
Yeah. So he should be president. Sorry.
I
would
I
vote
know,
for him
so
in a second.
How sad is that to say?
We're getting off topic, but yeah.
Sorry. We're back. And we're back.
I know.
Writing.
Yeah. Yeah. John Stewart equals hot.
Yeah. I know. We're weird.
You guys want to go through the rest of the nerds you would bang in Hollywood?
Oh, Edward Norton.
Mm-hmm. In a minute.
Nerd.
Yeah,
I would
totally.
Bang.
He's too difficult, though.
I don't care.
He'd want to rewrite your sex acts.
as long as it was interesting, I wouldn't care.
As long as it was physically possible, okay. And no goats. That's all.
No goats. That's the line in the sand for you for Hollywood weirdness. No goats.
No goats and sex.
It's a very low bar, Cheryl.
I know, right? Why am I not famous yet, right?
I don't know.
Nah, I don't know.
Okay, back to you. So,
where were we?
We're like a horrible morning radio show. Goats.
Yeah, how did you not have sound effects ready for that?
As soon as we start going to sound effects, I'm leaving this show.
No, okay.
Agreed. All right, so.
Writing and producing, so...
Five cast calls.
Yes.
She got a job. The pregnant job.
Oh, no, the pregnant job came later.
Okay. When you got here, you went to five casting.
Oh, those workshops, yeah.
Workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And then got something.
Mm-hmm. That's how I got my Taft-Hartley, yeah. And then the strike happened.
Oh, no. Right then?
Yep, right then.
Oh, poop.
Yeah, right
so,
then.
A year out of work, right?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Because I didn't take any, although I didn't join the union immediately, I didn't take any non-union work because I was like, all right, I'm already Taft-Hartley, and
you gotta
I had to stand in solidarity.
Okay,
so
you didn't work for how long?
Yeah, it was about 6 months.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So then you got...
Well, I mean, I don't remember exactly what job I got after that, but...
All I'm looking for is how you moved through after the workshops.
Mm-hmm.
What was the next thing you did to try to get it?
Yeah, I just started basically going to different, you know, film festivals and networking functions. Like, just going out. I mean, there's people... all over the city where you can,
which is why
Pitch Fests
are
network,
kind of okay.
Yeah.
Right?
And I feel like that is such a better venue and to build relationships than like going and paying someone. They're not going to respect you in the same way.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? And
no,
and
you're meeting a bunch of
people who are doing stuff, people who are working. And so, yeah, that's how I started. I did a lot of student films when I was starting out. Like, student films, like, I built so many great relationships that I still have to this day. You know, people that are working that call me randomly and like, hey, we got this new thing or whatever. And I think it's so important to, you know, for people who are just starting out to be able to, you know, network through other students, other, like, you know...
Well, right, and student filmmakers go on to hopefully become filmmakers.
Well, yeah,
and you're
right.
If you're
they
starting
don't
out,
do,
starting out,
but
some of them
a
do.
Good portion of them,
or at least
do.
Working in the industry in some facet.
And it's a great way to be able to build your experience, and also, you know, hopefully you're real. You know, if you're working on projects like at AFI and USC and stuff like that, then you know you can have some pretty great stuff to build.
Oh no,
yeah,
I agree.
Like
out of the 20 people you'll meet, one will be doing something
exactly
that drags you in. That's there's that we talk about that all the time, that you have to get to the places that are doing what you're interested in, like which is one of the few reasons Pitch Fest is okay. But yeah, any venue that you can get to that is basically the people that you want to connect with, absolutely go there. But and then you have to know how to connect with people.
Yeah. And you have to be discerning, too. I mean, you're not going to go, you know, do a two-year, you know, student film where they're shooting on 8mm. I mean, you know,
good advice there.
You have to be discerning. You have to say, okay, are they shooting, you know, what camera are they shooting on? Are they shooting, you know, even, you know, 16 can even be gorgeous. If, you know, with the right operator behind the camera.
Yeah, because your face is going to be out there.
Exactly. So. You want a, you know, you want a great script. You want a great character. And
I don't know. A two-year film shot in 8mm sounds like something Venture would do.
Shut up. Well, hey, if he was behind the lens, it would be great 8mm.
Or it could be the next Lars von Trier. You don't know.
You're right. Whatever. I hate when you have a point.
But discerning means exactly that. You have to know the difference. You have to know who you're dealing with. You have to know what they're shooting on, whatever.
Yeah.
And make your own decision.
If it's not sync sound, okay, just say no.
That's a t-shirt. Just say no to MOS. So, obviously, you've always been, you know, acting aside, you've always been a creative person. You've always tapped into, I'm sure you've always been a writer in some way, shape, or form. So when did you start getting into wanting to be a little bit more behind the camera in a producing writing sense instead of in front, or was it sort of parallel?
Well, oddly enough, I had never really thought about producing until, this is a funny story, I love this story, because my dear friend Paul McKinney was producing, he had written a script and he wanted to produce this short film, and this was back in 2001, and he calls me up and he starts pitching. He's like, so I'm agent. I hadn't talked to him in like 2 years, so like getting a call from him was kind of surprising. And he was like, hey Jen, I wrote this amazing script. He tells me all about it. It's like a spoof on Memento.
Mm-hmm.
Called Mementos, about the candy.
Okay.
About a commercial actor.
Okay.
Who does like all these commercials and blah blah blah, whatever. So he's pitching me this whole thing, and like I'm thinking, oh, it sounds amazing, like he wants me to act in it and blah blah blah. And then all of a sudden he drops the bomb, like, I want you to produce it. Like, I thought, like, I was racking my brain and I thought you'd be the best person. And I was like, he doesn't want me to be in it. Like, I was so offended at first. And I was like, what does he mean, produce it? Like, what does he want me to do?
I'm already behind the scenes. I'm done.
What does he want me to do? Like, why, and why would he think that I would, like, am the right person to produce this thing for him? So anyway, of course, I'm like, absolutely, I'll do it. I'm in. I have no idea what producing means or anything like that.
It means 700 different things.
Exactly.
By the way.
Oh yeah. Every
that's
project
I can't find.
Every project, it has a different meaning.
Oh,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I cannot find a definition
for a producer. There isn't. So I wound up producing, you know, co-producing this short film with him, and I fell in love with it. I found it to be completely fulfilling.
So what was your role as co-producer?
I was the AD, I was the craft service, I was like, you know, I did everything. I, you know, it was everything.
But was it like
location,
funding, or did you have
money? No. Funding was, it was his own personal pet project, so he funded it himself and all that stuff. But logistically, like, I handled, you know, a lot of anything
that needed to be handled. Gotcha.
And I fell in love with it. And then, just so, you know, it just kind of snowballed into, like, a couple of years later, producing my first feature for, like, 100 and almost, like, 200 grand or whatever. And, like, full SAG feature, you know, I got to hire all my friends, and it was a friend of mine who had written it, and he gave me, like, one of the lead roles in it, and it was, like, this dream come true kind of a thing. And then all of a sudden, I just, like, I really understood, like, the power, like, as an artist that you have when you're able to create your own projects. Mm-hmm. and you're able to, you know, you don't have to sit next to the phone constantly waiting for someone to call and say, this is when you're working.
No, there are 700 jobs to do.
Yeah.
You can pick a couple of them and go do them.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah. And you, I love the idea of being able to control my own destiny. So
I think it's amazing getting into it, just getting into the situation in the first place, like somebody calling you out of the blue to say, produce, and you going,
I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
I don't even know what that means.
What do you mean?
And which we were talking about at brunch, but just you tapped on something too, where it's the idea of where we were talking about at brunch, where being a self-generator, creating your own content.
Yeah.
Which, when we get to that, when we start talking about your blog, we'll talk about that. But just the fact that if you, instead of waiting for someone to call you and drop a job in your lap, just go out there and do it.
Exactly.
Just go do it.
And that's what we were talking about, is like, that's how the industry has changed so much.
Right.
Where we are today, everyone's doing that. And that's what you have to do in order to stay relevant.
Right.
In order to stay in people's minds. And you have to be your own brand. You have to be smart. You have to create your own content. You have to do all of those things.
Be involved in whatever context that means. Whatever.
Because whatever part. Yeah, I mean, no one's going to work as hard for you as you will. That's the bottom line.
Nowadays with podcasting or, you know, Funny or Die, or even a fucking YouTube video can make you a worldwide sensation.
Yeah.
It's just putting yourself out there and just creating.
Yeah.
And that's what people look for too. Mm-hmm. The agents and the managers and the people with the money look for people who can just create their own content.
Yeah.
Because nobody really wants to work.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody who can constantly create their own content, then you know they're a sure thing.
Yeah. And that's what's so exciting, I think, about like our industry, because, you know, if you're a painter, you know, even back in the 1800s or whatever, if you're a painter, you can go buy a piece of paper and paint and brush and like create your own stuff. But as a filmmaker, it's so expensive to do that.
Right.
But now, like more and more, it's becoming accessible to us that aren't making millions and millions, to be able to create our own.
You can shoot a feature length film on your iPhone.
I've seen some amazing YouTube.
I think it's pretty exciting.
Spoofs and stuff,
right,
and movies. Amazing.
Yeah.
So moving into writing.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually you started writing your own features and getting those made. And I know last year Finding John Smith came out, which you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it just, it actually got, the release was delayed. So it just came out on limited release in the Midwest. It was my first job, basically, where I was commissioned as a writer, which was really cool.
Yeah, getting paid to write is good.
It's pretty amazing, I must say. To
pressure, you know, I imagine.
Did you find it like
must write right now? God damn it, right now.
Well, what we had to do. We had to goddamn write. That's what
exactly.
We had to do.
That's what I'm saying.
We
some writers have a problem with that.
We had to write. Yeah. We wrote that script in under a month and a half. And
wow.
It was, and we were in full production like the week after the script was written. So we had to goddamn write.
That's fucking scary.
It was crazy.
That's scary.
It was crazy.
It's very scary.
And I was also like a creative producer, and I actually starred in the film. So it was like a triple crazy thing. But I think it was a culmination of like these years of really trying to find myself, which is interesting. That's called Finding John Smith.
So but, it had a different meaning for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a part of it, I mean, there was definitely a part of me in that script. Mm-hmm. I mean, for sure, you know,
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. But I, yeah, so it's, anyway, it's coming, yeah, it's in limited release now, and hopefully rolling out, like, outside of the, you know, it's, like, it's based in Iowa, so all those right. Midwesterners, they're
so how do you choose what to do first, it. If you have, like, I don't know, what was that, 3 or 4 jobs on the same mm-hmm. movie? What do you choose to do first?
Well, I mean,
what's your priority?
It's whatever needed that minute.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really like triage. That's what it is.
So I'm thinking.
It's like, which that's what producing right is now? Like
what's,
that.
Which ones do first?
Producing is like that. It really is like triage. Yeah. You're like, you're dealing with everyone.
Yes.
You're dealing with everyone. Everyone comes to you. And you have to be able to discern what is most important at that very moment and then prioritize.
Right.
And when you're doing a project like that, you know, I mean, the project came to me as a writing project. So obviously that was my first priority. So getting the script done.
That's what I'm thinking. But that's that's something you can put off so mm-hmm. easily.
Yeah.
Well, I'll write later tonight. Let me take care of this deadline, first.
You know, I write with a partner. Mm-hmm. I always have. And my writing partner stayed on my couch for the entire month and a half that we wrote that script. Literally, she slept
God
on my
bless
couch.
Her, right?
We woke
for
up.
For being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because that was the only way that we would have been able to write with that deadline.
Right.
There was no way we would have been able
to meet together.
We slept,
whenever. Yeah.
Ate, breathed that project for that entire amount of time. We woke up, we started writing, we crashed and woke up, and you know, we did the yeah. That was our
and
deal.
Fitting all the other shit in between. So
there was no other shit.
So you blocked off. You totally
there was
locked
no
down,
we would not down. If there was other shit going on in that during that time period.
That's what yeah.
Basically we had just finished another film. So we moved straight from like post right into writing this film, and we just like cut everything off and just like because we knew.
Don't talk to us.
Yeah. I mean otherwise it would not have
sequestered.
Would not have been done. We were sequestered.
That is the way to do it. That's, you know what? It's so funny that I hear women do this more than men do. Sequester.
Mm, yeah.
For bridesmaids, same thing. They were given a very limited time frame to finish writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they locked themselves in a room. And yeah. It was like pizza, beer, wine, write, wake up, sleep. That was it.
Yeah.
There was no outside anything
but it's
going
always,
on.
It's not always like that. You don't always have those parameters. Like,
that sounds amazing. You know what? If
people,
I could fucking do that,
I know.
Love that.
Well, most people, I mean, to be honest, in my experience, most writers write on spec. So you're mm-hmm. writing for like 3 years or whatever. You don't have a deadline.
Right.
That's
never a deadline.
There's never a deadline.
We talk about that all the
yeah.
time. Is Manny going to be able to handle that? You don't have
but you
that
can.
Kind of lengthy.
But you can. When you're forced into that box, you can. If you're
he
a good writer,
he does.
You can.
He pulls through
yeah.
when
he,
there's a
yeah.
semi-dead limit. You don't have, you've never had a,
no.
I need it by Tuesday.
No.
Period.
No.
You've never had
it's
that.
It's fun. No. That's why I love doing the blog now. It's like, because I haven't written in such since the baby, like basically.
Great segue, Jennifer.
Like, nice. I like it.
Let's talk about you. The conversation was about me. Goddamn
oh,
actors.
Does Manny love when it comes around to that?
Manny
anyway.
Doesn't like a deadline.
Anyway.
Hey, I didn't bring me up.
Anyway. So, yes. So, a blog has to be timely. You can't go
yeah.
four
well,
months.
And
you have their deadlines, and, like,
and
you set up a schedule.
And when you get an audience. When
you say
get an
weekly.
Audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, Manny's weekly. I remember when his articles.
Twice usually is what I post.
Oh, my yeah. God. Twice?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's two different things, but, like,
what
one
days?
Is, like, a food blog, and one is, like, the actual blog. It's
okay.
Monday and Thursdays is when I post. But, like, I set up
and
this
you have
whole...
to stick
good.
To that deadline, right?
Yeah.
That is
have...
good. That's
see,
so good.
This is what I was trying to get her to understand. It's mm-hmm. like, no, we got to post a show on Mondays.
Yeah.
She's like, well, when we do the show, we'll just post it whenever we do it. I'm like, no.
Your
you
readership
gotta, you
has
have to set
yeah,
up a specific day
yeah,
that
I'm
comes
so,
out.
I'm so, ish...
I love the word ish.
Very ish.
That is like my favorite word.
I ish. Actually had a watch that said one ish, two ish, three ish.
I love that.
That
love
is
it.
Me. the to a T.
Yeah. But when it comes to business, I'm not ish. Okay. Like, I had to research the whole thing, and I'm like, I set up an editorial calendar, which I'd never heard of before in my life. And
oh, dang.
I, like, went, you know, I'm scheduled out all the way until, like, you know, June or something right now.
With guest bloggers,
and, like, all kinds of, you know, what my topics will be. And, of course, it changes, but at least you have, like, the skeleton. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but
outline.
I love outline.
Yeah. We know that we're going to do the show every Saturday or Sunday, depending on our schedule. Mm-hmm. We literally will, right before we hit record, be like, okay, so what are we talking about?
What are we talking about? Yeah, well, she, you know what, and not fair because, you know, she got the itinerary for today. Right, before the show?
Right, well, yes, which, by the way, I scheduled back in November. So.
Right. So you got, what bullet point are we on? Oh, yeah, there are none.
I was like,
wait a minute, I didn't get it.
Was I email joking? Or yes. Is there something I shouldn't be saying?
Very good at dry sarcasm. Thank you. Thank you, MC. No.
So okay, so let's go back and talk about the blog a little bit.
Yes,
so you a couple of months ago you started a blog.
Yeah, well, okay. So I became a mom
after the pregnancy.
I was on
usually is the side effect of pregnancy.
I was on bed rest for 6 months with the baby. And it was not,
oh my God.
It was not the pregnancy that I had envisioned for myself, no. Obviously. So when I had the baby, you know, and I was like back to normal and getting out and whatever, and I had sort of met up with these other moms at this play group and whatever, and basically whatever, we started this hiking group just to like get out and mm-hmm. get moving and all that stuff.
I did that mom group.
I was like, I started this group on Facebook, and we just like, you know, we're a community thing. And my mom was like, this is a blog, like, you need to do this, like, you can really inspire other moms to get outdoors with their kids, like, you know.
Yes,
you should do it.
Not so hard, just do it this way.
Yeah. And I hemmed and hawed about it, and, you know, I was like, I don't know if I have the time, I don't know if anyone cares, and blah, 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 so whatever, I decided to do it, and it's only been 2 months or something, and I absolutely love it. I love the fact that I'm writing all the time, again, and
it's just for you, for the most part, mm-hmm. but other people get something out of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I already have gotten so much feedback, and, you know, I've gotten, you know, a lot of community support from other mom bloggers and stuff like that already, so it's been great, and that's it.
No, that's right?
It's a rave.
I would, except I danced my ass off last night, and it's not going to happen again.
What exactly are you blogging about?
I mean, technically, it's basically just about getting, you know, inspiring other families to get outdoors with their kids.
Gotcha.
But it's just about, like, our experiences.
Okay, so today, you know, we went to blah, 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 blah.
It hasn't even really been about that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I talked a lot about my pregnancy and, you know, and hoping that other moms could relate to being, mm-hmm. like, on bed rest. And it's like...
Oh, yeah, that's a completely traumatic thing, by the way.
Yeah.
That sounds so... Everybody thinks about that going, woot, bed rest. No, it's not.
It's not. Especially when you're, like, an active person, but...
I can't sit for 15 minutes at one time, so
yeah.
I can't comprehend
exactly.
bed rest for 2 hours.
Exactly. But then being able to, like, turn that around and, like, obviously, like, you know, make it
positive.
Into a positive yeah. thing, and, you know, I didn't have the labor that I wanted either, you know, I was breech, and she was too, you know, she couldn't turn, and, you know, so I had to have a C-section. It was like, I was like, I'm not gonna have any anesthesia, and I'm gonna have all natural, you know, and, like, And then it was like, again, the complete opposite of anything that I had envisioned for myself. Of course. And so I talked about that, and I've talked about, you know, our taking her, you know, when she was 4 months old, we took her to Big Sur camping for her first camping trip, and we took her to Istanbul, and, you know, all of just taking
that's
her
big.
Out.
That's
just
a big deal.
Showing her,
you know,
the world.
Why? I hate kids on a plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you brought your 4 month old. Did you bring your 4 month old on a plane?
No, she was 9 when she took her first plane ride.
9? Okay.
9 fine. Months.
9 months.
And
so you brought Tylenol, I'm assuming.
No, she was amazing.
She did not cry?
Oh my God, she was amazing.
My daughter was too. Actually,
we went to New Orleans.
She traveled great.
We went home for Thanksgiving, to New Orleans for Thanksgiving when she was 9 months old. And I always tell the story because it's so funny. On the plane ride back, of course, it's New Orleans. So the guy sitting next to us is, like, massively hungover.
Like, woot, beads all over the place.
Like beanie, like, pulled all the way down, covering his entire face under his chin. And of course, like, he sees us, and he sits down in his seat, and he's like, I don't fucking believe this.
I'm gonna kill myself. I would be saying the same thing too.
Like, come on, you know. And so he proceeds to, like, pull his beanie down over his face on takeoff. We land in LA, and he pulls his beanie up over his face, and he turns over to me, and he's like, you have the best baby in the world.
Oh, okay. She was amazing. A hungover person says that's a seal of approval.
Yeah.
That's a stamp.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. That
That's great.
Yeah, and then we took her 14 hours to Istanbul over the summer. She was 18 months old. She was, again, amazing.
My daughter was flying on her own at, like, 5, 6.
Yeah. I was 9.
Like, yeah, go with that woman.
Yeah.
See you
Call
in a couple
her
weeks.
Auntie.
See you in a couple weeks. Yeah, she had no problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the blog's obviously taking off into... Mm-hmm.
It sounds, I don't know why Manny didn't tell me this.
I just found out at brunch.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
It's very.
I'm sorry. Why am I not reading I'm not tapped blog? Into the mommy outdoor
why
group.
Why not? Why not, Manny?
I don't know.
It's very new.
And the blog is
I'm not her demographic.
What is mommy, it? Mommyhiker.com.
Mommyhiker.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the film side, mm-hmm. Acting, is there anything coming up? Like, what's next for you there?
I have one film that, Finding John Smith is going around right now. Hopefully
it's on, Amazon download.
It's on iTunes, it's out in the theaters, but only in the Midwest. Hopefully it'll be out here soon.
I will, and I'll post a link to all of that
stuff. Oh, great. Yeah. And then, I have another film called The Company that is like a 1950s thriller noir that's just come out onto the festival scene.
Cool.
Which is really
awesome.
Is that
like a remake or
no.
That's original?
Yeah. No, it's an original.
Okay.
Which I'm really excited about. It's like, you know, I've never done.
And are you
50s? Yeah.
I mean, you're acting
that's
in it.
Awesome.
Yeah, acting.
But is just acting or mm-hmm. did you write, direct, produce?
No, just okay. acting in that one.
That sounds fun.
It
though,
was
50s.
So much fun. So much fun.
Did you get to do the voice?
Did you do the 50s
no,
voice?
No, we didn't really.
That's my 30s.
No, we yeah, didn't. No. Yeah, yeah. We didn't really do. Yeah, we didn't do
but
that.
But you had to act sweet because it's 50s.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah. Act sweet, but very,
oh, God,
like,
I
was.
My mother was a whore, and she was in the 50s. So,
I
yeah.
play, I
yeah,
play like this
she's
thief. She's a thief. So
you're the
she
femme
has
fatale.
This, like, yeah, she's a very femme fatale. But
you're my mother.
It back around.
Okay. And then I have another film called Impasse that'll be out soon, which I did with Michael Beckemeyer. I don't know if you know Beckemeyer from Twitter.
No.
But he's pretty big on Twitter. And Jeannie, she's the editor of Script Magazine. Jeannie Bowerman. Vilya, I don't know how you say her last name. I'm not good with her last name. But she's Jeannie VB on Mm-hmm. You know her? Well, she she wrote and produced the film.
Okay.
And it's pretty bad ass.
Good.
So that one
what's
is
the genre?
Still in post.
And the genre is what?
Don't pause so much after you say it's
yeah,
certainly
you can't say
bad.
Bad.
No, it's
don't
totally,
make us
it's
like,
really?
Bad.
Yeah.
It's gonna be. It's gonna. I have a prediction that we'll be at Sundance next year.
Awesome.
Sweet. Yeah. Okay. Genre.
And I've never said that. It's just about this married couple that is going through this like you know really bad stage in their life, and the wife, which I play, is trying to move. In any direction, who knows if it's forward or to the side or backwards or whatever.
I saw that the first time
just
when it was called Antichrist.
I don't cut my clit off. Okay. Sorry.
Once again, callback.
what? So yeah, that's basically just I have those three things going on right now, and we're
sounds
repackaging. One of like our babies, you know, we all have them.
Mm-hmm.
Our baby Glass Houses has been, you know, in development, death,
hell, development, hell.
It's not even hell, it's death.
We'll cry here for a while.
It's in purgatory.
For a very long
limbo.
Time. Yeah. So
all
we're
the
just,
children are.
Revitalizing that, which is very exciting because it's our baby and we want to shoot it in New Orleans, which is also another very exciting
right of course
thing. So we're in the process of repackaging that, so that's exciting.
So your family
cool.
still lives in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most yeah.
So they all came back or didn't leave or they were safe or...
It's a combination of
yeah.
all of the above. Yeah, some of them left during the evacuation and never had the opportunity to come back, and some of them came back, some of them didn't want to come back, you know, it's yeah
that
so good. I still have family there, luckily. My mom, my brother, you know, my aunt, like one of my aunts is there, and cousins.
I just think that's an amazing like story of people had to leave, and do they come back or not? What do you
well,
do
that's the
that
thing.
Situation?
Even now, I mean, we're talking about, I don't even know what it is, 9 years later or 8 years later or whatever. The infrastructure there when it comes to, like, schooling and housing and stuff like that is still
horrible.
Not there.
Horrible.
It's horrible. And, you know, trust me, most of my family that left wanted to come back. They just couldn't.
Right.
They just couldn't. And then they, you know, they dropped down roots somewhere else, and it's hard when you have a family and you have to like take care of people, you know, it's hard to just like
you move on. It's
lift
been
up
years.
Again.
Yeah, no. You're talking years.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think we're almost at the end of the show. Golden Globes tonight.
Yes.
Any predictions, woman?
No predictions. No predictions. I can't wait to see the dresses.
Yeah, you're kind of an award show whore.
I love...
You're a red carpet whore, actually. More importantly.
I'm a red carpet whore, but if you are... You know, I'm also a good speech whore. So, Halle Berry, you know, when she won for Monsters Ball, you know, you just hope, like, 1 year there's, like, a good one like
well,
that.
And the Golden Globes, which openly allows drinking.
Yeah.
There's going to be some good ones.
It lends itself to good speeches.
Yeah, agreed.
And it's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
No, I'm totally psyched
I mean,
that.
Come
totally
on!
That.
Yes.
That's what I'm excited about.
Although I don't give a shit about the dresses.
I
don't do clothes.
I'm a fan of the fashion.
Yeah. Manny, too.
Yeah.
She's saying something about me right now. thank you so much for coming on the show.
Nice to meet you too.
So much fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I will drop links to Finding John Smith, and you're going to have to come back on when something else, when as soon as you hit Sundance.
Yeah, Glass Houses. Totally. Yes. Glass Houses yes. gets into production.
Knock on wood. We should probably schedule that now, right? For 2014, baby.
January.
We're locking up January this weekend.
Okay. I'll look in my calendar.
Yeah. If you can fit it into your blogging and your writing and your mommying. Oh, Ribby McCrack.
Shut up.
So thank you again so much for being on the show, and so for breaking in, and Jennifer.
Yay!
Manny.
Cheryl.
Till next week.
Peace out.